ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are going to discuss the seventh chapter, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This chapter is entitled as The Son of Drona Punished. Son of Drona is Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama is punished because he very inappropriately, very abominably, he killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi.
Not only he killed the five sons,
he also killed the sleeping Pandav generals and important allies of the Pandavas after the Battle of Kurukshetra. And Ashwatthama's incidence is coming here because Sukadeva Goswami is describing the appearance of Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj's appearance was linked with Ashwatthama because when Parikshit Maharaj was in the womb of his mother, Ashwatthama tried to kill him by releasing Brahmastra. And at that time Krishna personally saved him. So this chapter begins with, what was the end of last chapter, sixth chapter? How did the sixth chapter end? Who remembers? Yes. Yeah. Narad Muni, after instructing Vasudev, left. And then Shaunaka questioned, Shaunaka Rishi questioned, O Suta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vasudev heard everything from Sri Narad Muni. So after Narad Muni's departure, what did Vasudev do? Sri Suta said, on the western bank of the river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Samyapras, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. On the western bank of Saraswati. Saraswati, river Saraswati, is the manifestation of the energy of Saraswati. Saraswati is a personality. Who is Devi Saraswati? Saraswati Devi, she is the goddess of learning. Therefore, she is intimately connected to Vedas. And her river is Saraswati River. There are few very auspicious rivers in India, and Saraswati is one of them. And Vasudev was situated, or he had his ashram on the western bank of Saraswati. Why? Because when he is situated on the western bank, so when he faces Saraswati, he is facing on the eastern direction. So eastern direction is the auspicious direction. For receiving transcendental knowledge, east is very auspicious direction. For yoga, north is the appropriate direction. For going to hell, south is the auspicious direction. And for material prosperity, west is the direction. East, north, west, and south. So, Vasudev made his, he had his cottage on the western bank of the river Saraswati at a place called Shamyaprash. This place is also known as Badarikashram. Badarikashram because the Badari is a kind of berries. So that place had these groups of berries. Therefore it was Badarikashram. In that place, Srila Vasudev, in his own ashram, which was surrounded by berry trees, sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. Badari Shanda Mandite. Badari is berry, Shanda means trees, and Mandite means surrounded by. That place was surrounded by Badari trees. Therefore, his ashram is known as Badarikashram. So there, after touching water, Upasprishya Pranidadho Manah Shvayam, sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead along with his external energy, which was under full control. So there he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead along with his external energy. And this external energy was completely under control. That means Vasudev saw Krishna as well as the material nature. And when Krishna is in the center of the material nature, then the material nature is under full control. If the material nature is without Krishna, if we approach material nature without Krishna, what will happen? She'll be completely wild. Like we see the form of Kali, Chandi, Chamunda, destructive forms of material nature. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Due to the influence of the external energy or material nature, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes, the living entities are not actually meant to be under the control of the modes. But when a living entity rejects Krishna, then he becomes affected by the three modes of material nature. And as a result of that, he identifies himself with the material nature. How does one identify himself with the material nature? How does one identify himself with the material nature? By thinking that his body is his self. Actually, he is the soul, but because of his identification with the material nature, he begins to identify himself with his material body. And as a result of that, he forgets his identity as a soul, which is beyond the modes of material nature. The soul is not affected by the modes of nature. It's the body that becomes affected. And when the body becomes affected by the modes of material nature, the living entity thinks that he is being affected by the modes. The material miseries of the living entities, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vasudev compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So, this is a very important verse to remember. From tomorrow, we will take one verse and write on the board. And we'll recite the verse as we usually do, and then discuss the whole chapter. Now, this verse is very important. Anarthopo shamam shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janato vidyangshchakre satvata sanghitam. This verse, you take note, like anarthopa shamang shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokas sajanato vidyangsh chakre satvata sanghitam. Anartha means things which are superfluous. Anartha, that are not really necessary, not really desirable. And upashamam, anartha, we know about anartha nibritti. So upashamam actually means nibritti. Upashamam means mitigation. So anarthopashamam and anartha nibritti is the same thing. And how does it happen? Shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje. Bhakti yoga to adhokshaje. Adhokshaje, who is adhokshaje? Adhokshaje is Krishna. And adhokshaje means unto Krishna. The linking process of devotional service. Adhokshaje, unto the transcendence. Lokasya, of the general mass of men. Ajanata, those who are unaware. The mass of people, general mass, ajanata, they do not know about that. What they do not know? That anarthopo shamam shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje.
If one renders devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then all his material miseries are immediately mitigated. Do you want to suffer? Does anybody want to suffer? No. So what should you do? If you don't want to suffer, then what should you do? Bhakti adhokshan. Render devotional service unto Krishna.
Lokasya ajanato and vidwan, the supremely learned, chakre compiled, satvata sanghitam, in relation with the Supreme Personality. Satvata means This word sattvata is coming from sattva. Sattva means goodness or absolute truth. So there are Sanghitams, there are literatures in different modes. Now which literature is in the mode of goodness? There are six Puranas which are in the mode of goodness. But there is one Purana which is in the absolute mode of goodness, in pure mode of goodness. So that is Srimad Bhagavatam and that is Sattvata Samhita. So Lokasya Ajanata, because it is unknown to general mass of people, therefore Vidwan, the learned, Vasudev compiled the Sattvata Samhita. So you can see the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Why Vasudev gave Bhagavatam? To make people understand that by rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can become free from all material miseries. Wonderful solution. People are trying so much to mitigate their material sufferings. Isn't it? But the solution is so simple. But because it is lokasya ajanata, because people do not know that, they are suffering. They are trying so hard, but while they are trying, what is happening? They are increasing their misery. They are not decreasing their miseries. And the Western world is a very wonderful example for that. They are trying to make all kinds of arrangements, but what is happening? It is causing more and more difficulties. For example, they try to derive all kinds of energy. Like first it was steam energy. Boiling water, you get the energy. And with that energy, they were running mills, they were running railways, then they got electric energy, and then they got atomic energy. But they are making all these arrangements, but these energies are being misutilized. So atomic energy now is become the most powerful destructive arrangement. And the whole world is in total chaos and anxiety because of the terrorist attack. And eventually what will happen? The terrorists are not going to sit down. They will attack. And this time how will they attack? They will attack with the most powerful weapon, the atomic energy, nuclear weapons. So many, like some years back, I was going in London from one place to another, and there was such a huge traffic jam that there were so many cars, the fast-moving cars. They made nice roads to make these cars move, and the cars also can move with 240, 250 kilometers an hour. But we got stuck in a traffic jam, and we had a very important meeting, and we are stuck in the traffic jam for hours. And at that time somebody was telling me, the driver was telling me, that the time it used to take to go from one point to another point, 100 years back, it takes the same time now to go from that point to that point. Why? They created these fast moving cars, but their roads are jammed. There's so many cars that the cars cannot move. And in this way they are causing so many difficulties. Anyway, so at least we know how to mitigate the miseries of the material nature. So the The solution is anarthopo shamam shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janata vidyang chakre shataka samhita. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. Simply by giving oral reception to the Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. This is also another very important verse. Jashang boi shriya manayang krishne paramapuruse bhakti rupat paddate pungsha shoko moho bhayapaha. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Gauranitaya. Simply by giving oral reception to Vedic literature, to this Vedic literature, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. The feeling for loving devotional service to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. Shoka, moha, bhaya, apaha. Apaha means which extinguishes, that which extinguishes. The great sage Vyasadeva, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his son, Sri Sukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. Sukadeva Goswami was already engaged in, he was already self-realized. But Vyasadeva gave him Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Shaunaka Rishi makes a very pertinent question. He asks a very wonderful question. So Sukadeva Goswami was already self-realized. So why he had to study this vast literature, Srimad Bhagavatam? Sri Shaunaka asked Suta Goswami, Sri Sukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? So then also comes another very important verse. Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgranthakpa Urukrame Kurvanti Ahaituki Bhakti Itthambhuta Guna Hari. Why this verse is so important? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to explain this verse. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was an impersonalist. So this is the verse that smashes the impersonalist. The impersonalists think that to merge in the Brahman realization, to achieve Brahman realization, is the ultimate. Now the question is, Sukadeva Goswami was already in the Brahma Bhuta platform, Brahman realized. He was already Brahman realized, Brahma Jnani. Then why did he study Srimad Bhagavatam after that? So, all different varieties of Atmarams, those who take pleasure in Atma or spirit soul. Atmaram means those who derive pleasure from the Atma. They do not derive pleasure from their senses like ordinary people. Ordinary people derive pleasure from their senses. But a self-realized soul derives pleasure from his Atma. Atmanandi. So Atma Ramascha Munaya, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities, and that's why He attracts everyone, including the liberated souls. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus, he underwent the study of this great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam. Suta Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shaunaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage amongst the kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. So now he is saying what he is going to describe now. He will narrate the transcendental qualities of Krishna, the topics of birth, activities and deliverance of King Parikshit, and how the Pandavas retired from worldly activities. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destination, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being bitten by the club of Bhimsen, the son of Dronacharya Ashwatthama beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhan, however, disapproved of the heinous act and he was not pleased in the least. Actually, Duryodhan was, when he lost the battle, he was hiding. He left and he was hiding under water. And Krishna, Pandavas along with Krishna, came to that lake. And started to insult Duryodhan. You coward. You're hiding. And like a warrior feels very insulted when he cannot actually bear to hear any insult, especially when he is called a coward, especially when he is called that he should rather wear a sari and not claim that he is a man. So Duryodhan then came up, and Yudhishthira Maharaj gave an option. He said, Duryodhan, you fight with any one of us, five brothers, and if you win, then you will be considered to be victorious. We'll accept defeat. If you can defeat any one of our brothers, we'll give you that option.
And Duryodhan, we can see that how noble the Kshatriyas used to be.
That Duryodhan selected Bhima. Although Bhima, he knew Bhima was the most powerful. But because Bhima was his arch enemy, Duryodhana always considered that Bhima was his arch enemy. So he had a terrible grudge against Bhima. So he decided to fight with Bhima. And the choosing of weapon also was left to Duryodhana. And Duryodhana was very expert in mace fight with Gada. Balaram himself taught him how to fight with mace. That's why, in a way, Balaram was Duryodhana's guru. Balaram taught him how to fight with mace. And Balaram's weapon is mace. So who can be a better teacher of mace fight than Balaram? So Duryodhana learnt mace fight, Gada Yuddha, from using how to use mace by Balaram. Bhima also was very expert in mace fight. But Duryodhana was actually better than Bhima in mace fight. And so Duryodhana selected Bhima and Duryodhana selected mace to fight with. And both of them were fighting and nobody could defeat each other. Duryodhana was very expert and Bhima also was equally expert. And they fought for a long time. And at that time, Krishna reminded Bhima of his promise that he was supposed to break Duryodhana's thigh. So, in a mess fight, or in any weapon, in any fight, the hitting below the belt, hitting below navel, is considered to be unfair. All the attack has to be above the navel. So Krishna indicated that, pointing to his thigh, and then Bhima, at one point when Duryodhana jumped, then Bhima just smacked his thigh and broke his thigh. Balaram was there. Balaram was very upset. Balaram attacked Bhima with his plow. He wanted to kill Bhima for breaking the law. So Krishna stopped, prevented Balaram, reminding that Bhima actually took a vow. So when, in order to fulfill his vow, he hit him there, was not unfair according to the rule of fighting. And why Bhima took a vow to break Duryodhana's thigh? Because when they lost in that game of dice, when they lost Draupadi in the game of dice, Yudhishthira Maharaj was playing with Shakuni and he lost everything. Then finally they put Draupadi as a stake. But he lost. So then Duryodhana ordered Dushyasan to bring Draupadi to the assembly. So Dushyasan grabbed Draupadi by her hair and dragged her into the assembly. And then Duryodhana, indicating his thigh, rather indicated by pointing to his thigh to unrobe her. To undress her, to make her naked. That's why Bhima took a vow that he would break Duryodhana's thigh when the time comes. And he took a vow, another vow he took was that he would drink Dushyasana's blood. And he did that. When he killed Dushyasana, just before killing, he tore open Dushyasana's chest. And so these are Kshatriyas. So this is how Krishna pacified Balaram. And Duryodhan was lying there, and then Ashwatthama and Kripa came there. Ashwatthama, Kripa, and three of them came. Who was the third one? Probably Shalva. Anyway, three of them came and they saw that Duryodhan was lying there with his broken thigh. And Ashwatthama was very upset. All three of them were very upset that Bhima broke his thigh in a mess fight, which was unfair. Then that night they were lying down under a tree, and Ashwatthama couldn't sleep, and he saw that one owl came and attacked the nest of a bird that was killed all the baby birds. So from that he got an idea of attacking a knight. And the battle was over, so Pandava army was sleeping in their tent. And Ashwatthama went there and he went inside the tent, and started to slaughter everyone. And he killed, when they were sleeping, he killed the five sons of Draupadi. First of all, they were young boys. They were hardly about 14 years old. And the sleeping sons he killed. And he brought the heads of those five sons of Draupadi to Duryodhan. And he said that he brought the head, he thought that let Duryodhan leave his body happily. That was Ashwatthama's idea. That he would leave his body happily, thinking that he has taken his revenge. The five Pandavas have been killed. He thought, Ashwatthama presented that he brought the heads of five Pandavas. Duryodhan at first was happy. But then he took the head, and out of anger, he just squeezed the head, one head, and the head cracked. And from that, Duryodhan could understand that these are not the Pandavas' heads, these are some boys' heads. And Duryodhan became very upset with Ashwatthama, that you killed the boys, the sons of Pandavas. You didn't kill the Pandavas. So that is why saying how. Duryodhan, however, disapproved of the heinous act and he was not pleased in the least. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in great loss, Arjun spoke to her thus, "O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahmana, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then, after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head." Arjun, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons. And getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashwatthama, the son of his martial teacher. Ashwatthama, the murderer of the princesses, seeing from a great distance Arjun coming to him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear from Shiva. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki. When the son of the Brahmana Ashwatthama saw that his horses were tired, he considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, nuclear weapon. Since his life was in danger, he touched water in sanctity and concentrated upon the chanting of the hymns for throwing nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons. Thereupon a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce that Arjun thought his own life is in danger. And so he began to address Lord Sri Krishna. Arjuna said, O my Lord Sri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flame of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. O Lord of Lords, and yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation, characterized by religion and so on, for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. Thus, you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the hymns of nuclear energy, Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death. O Arjun, only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon. Sri Suta Goswami said, hearing this, from the personality of Godhead, Arjun touched water for purification and after circumambulating Lord Sri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one. When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire like the disk of the sun covered all outer space and the whole firmament of planets. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartaka fire, which takes place at the time of annihilation. Thus, seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjun at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Sri Krishna desired. So Arjun first counteracted the Brahmastra and then he retracted both the Brahmastras, which Ashwatthama didn't know how to retract the Brahmastra. Arjun, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gautami and bound him with ropes like an animal. After binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. The personality of Godhead Shri Krishna, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. Lord Shri Krishna said, "O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a Brahmana, Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless,
intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid,
or devoid of his chariot. Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul."
Kshatriyas, although warriors and very valiant fighters, they very strictly follow the principles of warfare. And in this verse that has been explained, a Kshatriya is allowed to kill his enemy.
A Kshatriya could kill his enemy and no sin will be involved. But here it has been pointed out that under certain condition, a Kshatriya doesn't kill his enemy. If the enemy is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. If the enemy doesn't have a chariot, then one does not generally kill. Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he will go down by his own action. Furthermore, I have personally heard you promise, Draupadi, that you would bring forth the head of the killer of her sons. So Krishna reminded Arjuna that who took a vow that he would kill Ashwatthama and bring his head to Draupadi. This man is an assassin and murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has
also dissatisfied his master.
He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. Suta Goswami said, although Krishna, who was examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him, although Ashwatthama was a heinous murderer of his family members. After reaching his own camp, Arjuna, along with his dear friend and charioteer Shri Krishna, entrusted the murderer unto his dear wife, who was lamenting for her murdered sons. Sri Suta Goswami said, Draupadi then saw Ashwatthama, who was bound with ropes like an animal and silent for having enacted the most inglorious murder. Due to her female nature and due to her being naturally good and well behaved, she showed him due respect as a Brahmana. She could not tolerate Ashwatthama's being bound by ropes, and being a devoted lady, she said, "Release him, for he is a Brahmana, our spiritual master. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. He, Dronacharya, is certainly still existing, being represented by his son. His wife, Kripi, did not undergo a shati with him because she had a son. O most fortunate one, who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipful. So this way you can see how noble a personality Draupadi was. Although her five children were murdered brutally in their sleep by this person, Ashwatthama, but he was, and when Ashwatthama was brought to her, just by seeing him, her whole attitude changed. She saw, here is a Brahmana, and not an ordinary Brahmana. He is the son of Arjuna's spiritual master. And Dronacharya was so affectionate towards Arjuna. And she felt that this person shouldn't be killed. And she felt also that if he is killed, how his mother is going to feel. I lost my sons, they are not going to come back. But if he is killed, even if he is killed, my sons are not going to come back. But if he is killed, the way I am feeling the pain, his mother is going to feel the pain. And so Draupadi requested Arjuna, please release him. My lord, do not make the wife of Dronacharya cry like me. I am aggrieved for the death of my sons. She need not cry constantly like me. If the king's administrative order, being unrestricted in sense control, offends the Brahmana order and enrages them, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family and brings grief upon all. So we can see that, like sometimes people think, especially in the West, some of our devotees think that, oh, in the Vedic culture, the women were subjugated, the women were maltreated and so forth. But here we can see how glorious the women in the Vedic culture used to be. Like Draupadi, so wise and such a profound character and such deep and broad attitude she had. She is saying that he knew the consequences of killing a Brahmana. That the killing a Brahmana can destroy the entire Kshatriya family. So that is how the Brahminical order was respected by the ruling class at that time. Suta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity and without duplicity. Nakul and Sahadev, the younger brothers of the king, and also Shataki, Arjun, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, son of Devaki, and the ladies and others all unanimously agreed with the king. So Yudhishthira Maharaj agreed with Draupadi's statement, and everyone else agreed with Yudhishthira Maharaj's statement. Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing this culprit who in an angry mood had murdered sleeping children for no purpose and for neither his nor his master's interest. So Bhima, others could could forgive, but Bhima could not. So he said, no, he must be murdered. Chaturbhuja, the four-armed one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna, and he began to speak as if smiling. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna said, a friend of a Brahmana is not to be killed. Although this person is not a Brahmana, but a Brahma Bandhu. He is not Brahmana by qualification. But he is born in a Brahmana family, out of Brahmanical parentage. So although he is not a Brahmana, still he should not be killed. But if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. A Brahma Bandhu should not be killed, but an aggressor should be killed. All these rulings are in the scriptures, and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife, and you must also act to the satisfaction of Bhimsena and me. So, now Arjun is in a dilemma. What to do? In one hand he shouldn't kill, but on the other hand he has to kill him. So, just then Arjun could understand the motive of the Lord by his equivocal orders, and thus with his sword he severed both hair and jewels from the head of Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama was born with a jewel in his head. Arjun severed the jewel from his head along with his hair. He, Ashwatthama, had already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide, and now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus, he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Cutting his hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and deriving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative of a Brahmana. There is no injunctions for killing the body. Thereafter, the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, performed the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. Thus ends the seventh chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Son of Drona Punished. Interesting, huh? Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Chitrangada. Okay, yeah, good. The respective, it has been mentioned there that in the battle of Kurukshetra, the soldiers on both sides died and attained their respective destinations. The respective destinations, those who were devotees, they went back to Godhead. But those who are not devotees, but because they died in a battlefield, they went to heavenly planets. So when a Kshatriya dies in a battlefield, he either goes to heavenly planet, or if he is a devotee of Krishna, and especially when Krishna was there, some of them left their body seeing Krishna, so they went back to Godhead. Take the mic. What's that? Ashwatthama, like a madman, is still wandering around. in the Himalayan mountains. Yeah. Yeah. He actually is kind of, has a very long duration of life. He's almost immortal. So he didn't die, he's still existing. But because of his sinful activities, and he didn't actually stop there. He again released Brahmastra to kill Parikshit. So that will come in the next chapter. So he's such an abominable personality, although born out of such a great parentage. And because he is so disturbed because of his sinful reactions, like a madman, he's wandering around. And as you said, Prabhupada said, then the snowman, he is the snowman. Abominable snowman. Yeah, Krishna Chan, what's your question? Give him the mic.
Why the
five sons of Draupadi. There must have been some reason, but I don't remember. Is it generally? But the thing is, ultimately, it's all the laws of acts of the. Laws of the material nature, that one. In the material nature, everyone has to undergo various kinds of trials and tribulations. And especially Kshatriyas, in one hand, they have the facilities to enjoy, but eventually you see that this nature is full of suffering. And it is also very important to note that the Kshatriyas, I mean, especially when you read Mahabharata, we see that it's so full of suffering, which indicates the mode of passion will breed suffering. Mode of passion will cause suffering. And that is how the law of nature is. You try to enjoy the material nature, you end up suffering. Like an example is, a classic example is, Satyavati's father, Dhivar Raj, he wanted that her daughter's son would become the king. And as a result of that, Bhishma Dev had to take a vow that he would not have any claim and he will not ever get married. Now Satyavati's two sons, both of them died young. See, the grandfather wanted that the grandchildren would become kings, but both of them, although became king, but they died very young. And they died without children. And there was no successor to the throne. And then same Satyavati is requesting Bhishma, that you please procreate to continue the dynasty. And Bhishma said, no, that's not possible. The Pandavas, for so many years they were in exile. Then they come, they get back their kingdom, but then still they lose everything in that game of dice. And then they get their kingdom, but consider what happened, how they got the kingdom. When they got the kingdom back, practically everyone was dead. Everyone was dead. Now you like to enjoy with your near and dear ones. But what's the point in getting your kingdom back when all your near and dear ones are gone? So in this way we can get to see the real nature of this material nature. What the material nature is like. This is what the material nature is like. Try to enjoy, make all kinds of arrangements. No enjoyment, only suffering. Yes. माइक से माइक में बोलो. या अमर या दे विल बी हियर फॉर अ लॉन्ग टाइम अंटिल द एनिहिलेशन. What's that? Yeah, Krishna in Dwarka, sometimes Chaturbhuj and sometimes Dibhuj. This is Dwarkesh Krishna Vasudev. Didn't Krishna, at the time of his birth, how many arms he had? When he appeared in Kamsa's prison, Mathura? So four arms. So he can be four armed, he can be also two armed. Also when Akrura was taking Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura, what did Akrura see when Krishna and Balaram went to take bath? Saw his four armed form. So Mathuresh Krishna or Dwarkesh Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, is sometimes Dibhuj, sometimes Chaturbhuj. But Vrindavan Krishna is always Dibhuj. He can take Chaturbhuj, he can assume the Chaturbhuj form, but that's not his original form. And the residents of Vrindavan, especially Radharani, knows that. So once when Krishna disappeared from Rasa dance, he assumed the four-armed form and stood there. But Radharani was not interested. The other gopis offered obeisances, they were not interested. Because they knew that this is not the real Krishna. This is Krishna Anna Jadu Sambhuta. It's another Krishna who is born in the Jadu dynasty, Jadu Sambhuta. But Brajendranandan Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Therefore, gopis offered obeisances and left. But when Radharani saw, not when Radharani saw, rather when Krishna saw Radharani, he could not keep his four arms. He just, other two arms disappeared and he became two arms. Yes. Well, that happened in her absence, in the battlefield. In the battlefield when they fight, that's one thing. But here, he was brought to her, bound like an animal. And seeing that, she felt compassion. She was moved by compassion. And Duryodhana is a Kshatriya, so they, Kshatriyas fight and kill each other, that's okay. But killing a brahmana was not right. Yes. Okay, say, what's your question?
The time you discussed on how from the tree comes out.
How?
Why the from the tree from the fear of evil.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Once Brahma became attracted to to his daughter Saraswati. And he ran after her. So at that time Lord Shiva became very angry that he, being the father, running after his daughter. So Lord Shiva took his trident and chased Brahma, and Brahma, out of fear, he ran away. Yes, Yamuna. Come again. Yeah, which means pure mode of goodness, pure goodness. Is the same. Pure goodness is transcendental. But material goodness is mixed goodness. Material goodness is not pure. The goodness, sattva, raja and tama, the sattva guna in the material nature is not pure. There is some tinge of passion and ignorance in that goodness. Therefore it is called mishra sattva. But transcendental goodness is suddha sattva, pure goodness. And Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental goodness. Nothing to do with this material nature. Other scriptures may derive some material benefit or indicate some material benefit. Vedas are in three modes. Traigunna Vishaya Veda. The Vedas are influenced by the three modes. But Nistraigunna Bhav Arjuna. Arjuna, you become transcendental to the modes. Right? And that is pure goodness. Yeah, okay. Good. So when a devotee is acting in the mode of passion, but who is the center of that action? Krishna. So is it passion or transcendental? Because it's in relation to Krishna, it is transcendental. But we should be very careful. We should not give excuse to be in the mode of passion. On our part, we should try to be in the mode of goodness. But if Krishna wants, yes, we can act in the mode of passion also. Like Arjuna. Arjuna didn't want to fight. But Krishna said, you fight. Therefore, Arjuna was fighting. Now, does fighting take place in the mode of goodness? So, fighting is in the mode of passion. But because Arjuna is fighting for Krishna, it is transcendental. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande.